That was in Podesta.
That was about the time it came down.
That's probably why I didn't see him.
Let's call our meeting to order. I pledge
allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Gaylord.
Here.
Grunch.
Here.
Needhammer.
Here.
Sansom.
Here.
Town.
Here.
Quorum present.
Okay. Our first item of business is the consent agenda. And the purpose of the consent agenda is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one commission motion without discussion. Any member of the commission, staff, or the public may ask that at any time any item on the consent agenda be removed and placed as the last item under new business to receive full discussion. Such requests will automatically be respected. And today we have five items on the consent agenda. Is there any further discussion?
I have some changes on the minutes.
Okay.
In the fluoride section, there was a reference that I made a comment. In the minutes, it shows calcium chloride. I said calcium fluoride. Mm-hmm. And then also, apparently, all my notes are left not with me. The on the next page, there was a section about where I referred to reports on various sides of the aisle, and then your sentence left off with, what are we left with, question mark. Well, it needs to finish up with my thought that said, if there's only one report on each side, that's enough for me to vote no.
Okay, so that was, because I listened to it, we all listened to it again to make sure
basically
we didn't miss anything.
Left with, even if there's only one valid report on either side showing the benefits or the issues with that, then that needs to be, then that's enough for me to vote no.
What page is that, Derek?
Should have been 9.
Page 9. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 9 and 10. Starts at 9 and 10.
Okay, do we want to pull that from the agenda here and bring it back next month?
That's fine. I mean, if that's fine with you, we can do that.
Yeah.
How about the other three items, or four items, excuse me?
I'm fine with the planning and zoning contracts. So.
Mm-hmm. And I have, there was one typo on page 11. It should be he, not she, because that's referring to Dan. So it's just minor, but I will fix it. Okay.
Anything else? Ask for a motion then on items A, B, C, and D, removal of E to be brought, correction, removal of... Item A to be brought back next month.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second it.
Roll call.
Gaynor.
Aye.
Grunch.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Sansom.
Aye.
Town.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay. Our next item of business is the hearing citizens' comments on non-agenda items. And please hold your comments to 5 minutes, and please identify yourself if you wish to speak. Ron.
Ron Georgia, once you've been at Memorial. I hope you guys had a good Memorial Day. I think it was a success there. A note of interest, when the national anthem was being sung, an eagle was flying across the edge of the water. I don't know if anybody saw it, but he's sitting there, did see it. We'd like to thank Jeff in the police department helping us out. The Marina, Barb Brooks in the Marina mowing the center of the memorial, and the city mowing the outskirts of the memorial. One of the things that I think the people of Boise City don't understand that this isn't just the memorial committee's memorial. This is the city of Boise City's memorial. And we need people to help keep it clean and keep it in order. You know, there was several of us this last week that worked very diligently at sprucing everything up, and it takes time. It takes a lot of personal time. And the bad part about it is on the committee, I'm the only one that still works. Everybody else is retired. But there's only a couple of us that find time for the memorial. And we need to remember that if it wasn't for those guys over there that gave their life, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing. And that's very important. And I think most of the people forget about that. And I just want to make that noted. So if you pass that on, have them contact the committee member, and you know, we will get with them and do what we have to do for the summer. And I would appreciate it, and I know my wife would too. On the negative note of this, we can tell the fudges are back. It's what you guys want. Come to Boyne City. But guess what? 2 years ago, I brought this to you about dogs pooping in the memorial. My wife and I have already picked it up. And I'm disgusted. There is a city ordinance. You know, I know they got to be caught and whatnot. But the thing of it is that you've got people coming up here and showing disrespect to our community by doing all the wrong things. And if that's the type of people you guys want up here, then that's fine, because I know that's not what it's like. Thank you and have a good day.
You're on. Yes, sir.
Is this an appropriate time to make a flooring comment, or is that on?
Oh, certainly, if you wish.
Oh, sure. My name is Bob Boyd. I actually had not planned to be here. I was just at the barber shop, which is a lot better than it was before. There's nothing to cut. But I was reading the paper, and I was shocked, honestly. Like, I'm not normally a politically motivated person. I'm interested, but not usually showing up at meetings such as this. But to see that the fluoride was voted to be taken out of our water, and it's a shock to me. I'm not particularly prepared for this, but I'm just a basic, you know, educated person. I have a PhD in an unrelated discipline, but I know every major health organization essentially is for fluoride in the water. I have a number of friends who are dentists, but my concern is what it says about our community. I have a son and daughter-in-law who just were looking to buy a home. They ended up buying something in Harbor Springs. But the kind of community, or that kind of vote, which goes flies in the face of the majority, the great majority of scientific evidence, is appalling for a community. And the face that it puts, the face that it is going to put for us is not the progressive kind of community I think we would like to be seen as. And I think my son and daughter-in-law would for sure have not bought a home in Boyne City if they saw, you know, that kind of a vote. So I'm just expressing my dismay. I hope there's a way to overcome it. But if we think about this, there's always some type of opposing view for, in some way, are we going to ask our physicians not to inoculate for polio and some of these other, because there's an outlying physician that has some other views. So anyway, I'm sorry to come in last minute without a prepared statement, but it does make us, I believe, look very, very bad. I hope there's a way to reconsider this. I don't think this is the place to remake science. So, anyway.
Thank you, sir. Howard?
Hi, my name is Howard Newkirk, and I also like to talk a little bit about fluoride. I think it's a regrettable decision that happened here. My understanding, though, is that fluoride was put into use here by a public referendum back in the 70s. And I just wondered if we could get a legal opinion from the city attorney
whether in fact you can overcome the referendum with a simple 2-2 vote of council. If that is valid, and I don't know what it is, but if it is valid, then I'd also like to know what it is that we the public have to do to overturn this terrible decision. So is that something for Mike to do?
Well, us as a commission, we would have to direct Mike to consult our legal firm. That would probably be the process.
And
to see if there is
clarity. How can I push that along? Or can't I?
Pardon, sir?
How can I push that along?
Well, it's decision of the commission. And by you being here today and expressing your concern and thinking that there doesn't seem to be a clear answer whether a commission can override the vote of the people is the question. So,
okay.
Well, thank you.
I'd like you to take that other advice. Thank you.
Art?
Well, I gather this is the time to talk about fluoride. I thought maybe it was going to be on the agenda, but I have some comments. Howard sort of went into it, as did this other gentleman very eloquently. I've been told that the city council has been told, that the charter tells the city council that it has the right to deal with anything not explicitly prohibited in the charter. But I would suggest to you that there are other constraints. There's federal statute, there's state statute. And I would like to suggest there's plain common sense. I received opinions from three attorneys on this issue. And I would say that all three of them were of the mind that this was an illegal action on the part of the council. First, let me describe opinions a little bit. An opinion letter that you get from an attorney puts that attorney on the spot. It creates a liability for him. And so when you go to get an opinion letter, that attorney's got to do a fair amount of research, and it's going to cost you a fair amount of money to get an opinion letter. Then there are opinions when you go to your friends who are attorneys and ask them what they think. The three that I'm going to refer to are friends who I asked and told me what they thought. As I say, all three of them thought that this was an illegal action. But I want to deal with one of them in particular. He's the mayor of Ionia, town of 10,000 people, the county seat. His father was mayor before him when he was a kid, father was there for 20 years. And Dan succeeded his father and went in at the age of 28. He's 54 now, so he's been mayor for a long time. And his whole lifetime has been involved and surrounded by municipal management and municipal law. He was strongly of the opinion that it was illegal. And he gave me an example of something that he did a couple decades ago. He decided that Ionia needed a city income tax. Now, that's a pretty draconian action. And I suspect most of you can't imagine that the citizens of any town of that size would vote for an income tax. But he did serious research. And he found out if the council enacted that, it could be overturned later on by another council. If he went for a referendum, it could not be overturned by another council. He went for a referendum, and much to my amazement, it passed. And it stood for 20 plus years, and it has not been overturned. Given the experts that have testified here, to which this gentleman referred, dentists, medical doctor, health officials, all uniformly of the opinion that fluoride should stay in the water. And the research I've done with opinions, which you've just heard about, I think the failure to get an opinion from the city attorney is tantamount to dereliction of duty. It's not going to cost that much, and I certainly think it's going to cost us in litigation.
got a question for you. The city manager of Ione, is he an attorney?
No, the mayor is the one.
Or the mayor, excuse me.
He is an attorney, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
A very experienced attorney, I might hope. In municipal government, in that he's lived with it all his life. His father was in when he was growing up, and then his, well, he went in at 28, and so he's 54, now he's been there all those years.
Okay. Thank you. Do we have anyone else that wishes to speak? Tom?
I had the opportunity to speak the last week to discuss this, so I don't want to belabor the point, other than to say that since the commission acted on this, I've been contacted by the American Dental Association, by the Michigan Dental Association, all wondering what's going on. And I can tell you that the disease that we will start to see, if this doesn't change, within the next 3 to 5 years, will be amazing. And there'll be a lot of very unhappy people in this community. We have forgotten how bad it was before fluoride came to this community. When we treat children outside of fluoridated areas, the difference is significant. And we are hospitalizing dozens and dozens. In fact, last year we hospitalized over 400 children statewide from non-fluoridated areas just to do dentistry on them. These are children 18 months to 24 months of age. This is absolutely wrong. The cost to society in dollars and cents, in addition to pain and suffering for both the children and their families, is just horrendous. So I wish you would think again.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else in the audience wishes to speak to the commission on a non-agenda item? Well, we've been questioned as a commission here regards to the legality of what took place last month. And I don't know, it seems to me that we should have a clear answer and whether the city commission has the right to overturn a public referendum, laws or ordinances on our own initiative. And I think we should ask for a motion, I will ask for a motion from our commission to direct the city manager for clarity and ask him to consult our legal firm, Plunkett & Queen.
Mr. Mayor, I would concur with you, and if this would be the appropriate time to ask for this topic to be put on as a new agenda item under new business, and so that we can, you know, with respect to our audience comments and respect to the flurry of newspaper articles and with respect to the town, the community talk, that I think we do need to address the legality of the issue, and by putting it on today as new business agenda item, we would address it today instead of a month from today or 2 weeks from today. And the request would be, I agree with exactly what you said, the request would be that we request city manager to look into the legality issue of whether a vote of the commission can override the vote of a referendum of the people. So,
well, I guess my question would be to everybody, you know, is there any reason to bring it back under new business, you know, the last item of new business, rather than making the motion now? Is there anything further to discuss? I mean, we've heard the request from the public, and I've probably heard at least a dozen people ask me the same question, whether it's in several of the opinion letters to the paper also asked whether we did something legal or not. So I think we can handle this with one simple motion. We either ask the city manager to do it or not do it. But to go on further discussion under new business, it's Commissioner Gaylor.
City Manager, you can call on them, please.
Obviously, I've been asked this question by a number of people, newspapers and things of that nature, and I gave them what I was able to research, and I prepared that this item might come up on the for discussion by some point. My recommendation, if you were to follow this procedurally, I would suggest that you do add it as an item of new business, as the Commissioner Needhammer has suggested, if you want to talk about it, or else open it up as an item of business at this point right now. I got some stuff I'd say about it, but until you figure out procedurally how you want to proceed with this, if at all, I'm kind of holding back.
Well, I would make it be my request to make it an item of business right now rather than rehash it again a half hour or 45 minutes from now.
Yes, follow up for the city manager. Do you have any information different than what you've already provided us via email?
No.
On this topic?
Maybe a little embellishment at with regards to my discussions with state officials on it.
I'm referring to the charter and the city commission's ability.
Correct.
Okay. So I'm confident that the information you provide is the same. Whatever it is, it is. If that quells the concern of the citizens, so there's zero doubt in their mind that it was legal what we did, then I'm 100% for it.
Gene, any comment?
Well, I'm not changing my mind on what I said about the choice.
No.
I still think it's a choice that people want to do. But if this is the only way that it can be cleared up, if it's legal, if it's not legal, I would be okay to check with an attorney to make sure it's right or wrong. And I'm not changing my opinion.
Okay. Do we need a motion to request our city manager to consult our legal firm?
On this issue, I'd request one, yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll make the motion that we ask our city manager to provide clarity to us in regards to whether or not we acted in properly.
I'll second that.
Correct. And can we add to that language and any consequences of either decision? And not just whether it's legal or not, but the consequences also should be into that research by the legal attorney.
That would be part of it anyways.
That would help, so just clarify.
I second in with what the mayor presented.
Okay. Roll call.
Grunge?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Gaylor?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Correspondence from the State of Michigan Department of Community Health regarding fluoride. And this letter is also available on our website. I'm not going to go through the reading of it here at the meeting, but we do recognize it, and it is an agenda item today. The next item we have is the resolution recognizing the 200th anniversary of the National Anthem of the United States, which but Mr. Barfield was here last week at the last previous meeting here, I believe it was the 13th. We recognized this resolution and passed it, having to do with the National Anthem of the United States being 200 years old, September 14th, 2014. Any discussion on either of these two items? Okay, moving forward, city manager's report.
Boyne City was well represented at last week's National Main Street Conference in Detroit. In addition to us being able to attend many informative sessions, it was nice to have strangers approach us as we're all wearing our Boyne City t-shirts and come up and tell us how they loved our community and enjoyed coming here. The new shoppers and the new and extended shoppers is now open for use while we're still fine-tuning a few items like getting all the lights turned on. But go out and check it out and enjoy it. Three of our fixed docks at the marina have been removed and are being replaced with the new adjustable height docks. So that process is well underway as well. The last of our marina dredging spoils have been removed from the parking lot just west of us here at the Little League ball field. And the area is again open to the public for parking and visiting. And we're working to get the lawn reestablished in the center area there. Work on the Pleasant Division Street Improvement Project continues to make good progress. A non-final pavement patch has been installed over the new storm sewer main on Pleasant between Division and Morgan. That'll get some repaving as we go forward, but it's now open for traffic on a fairly smooth surface. The new sanitary sewer main on Pleasant south of Division has been installed. That section has been completed. And with those extra city phases of work completed, the MDOT portion of the project is now beginning with pavement on Pleasant south of Division getting ready for removal so the extended storm sewer can be installed. So we finished the city extras first, those two extra components, and we're now moving officially into the MDOT portion of it, which will end up with the repaving of those sections of Division and Pleasant Street. Work on the new storm sewer lead on Division Street that was approved by the City Commission at our last meeting in the drain area west, the wet area east of Parkview Apartments is scheduled to begin tomorrow. You should be seeing some equipment show up there on the site by the end of the day today. Much of the pavement parking work around town has been completed. Mainly the parking space lines have yet to be done, but they expect to be back in this afternoon, resuming that work. This evening, Andy Kowalski, Larry Fox, and I will be meeting briefly with the Evangeline Township Board, their Planning Commission, and Zoning Board of Appeals to discuss with them on site, on Court Street, the proposed paving project. They're doing that part of their regular community tour. And again, if the Commission would ever like to do, we used to do those on a somewhat regular basis. If the Commission's ever interested in doing that again, please let me know. We could set one of those up. Of course, we have the much-anticipated four city facility design concept that have been developed by Environment Architects that will be unveiled tonight at 6 p.m. at the Boyne Area Senior Center. So hopefully everybody's seen these flyers popping up around town.
Does that mean they're going to be in two places at once?
No, we'll just be running on a real tight timeline as usual. And they said they only need us for about 10 minutes up at Evangeline Township. We'll see if they keep us to their word, but I won't be missing this other one, that's for sure. So that's at 6 p.m. tonight at the Senior Center. Talked to Ray earlier today. He's all set. He says he's got some very good stuff to look at, and I'm anxious to see it like everybody else. So hope to see you all there. We begin the first of our three spring household rubbish collections this Wednesday. So that'll be going on for this and two more weeks after that. For the City Commission, we need to have you know Cindy and I know your plans regarding attending the Mayor's Exchange in Frankenmuth. I forwarded to the Commission a schedule we received from Frankenmuth for their days of activities on Monday, June 16th. We'd have some discussions earlier about catching the tail end of the Riverian Festival, which ends on Sunday, June 15th. It looks like they have a full day scheduled for us on the 16th, so we'll either have to leave, if we just want to do this Monday the 16th, leave here very early and go down and come back, or if there are people that are anticipating or interested in going down and seeing what goes on the tail end of their Bavarian Festival, we'd have to make arrangements for that as well, too. That would be pretty much on our own. I'm sure they don't have anything formally scheduled for us on that day. It's on the 16th. So anyway, we need to finalize that so we can let our hosts know how many of us to expect. And I was just some late minute stuff since I printed this up a little while ago. Got We got a phone call from our friends up at CCE 911 with regards to their completion of the mapping process for switching on our responses for Eveline Township, those expanded areas that we approved at the City Commission about a month ago. It's taken them longer than we anticipated to get the mapping, and so they have it ready to dispatch done yet, so we have not started covering those areas, and neither has Charlevoix started covering the additional areas west of the south arm of Lake Charlevoix. They anticipate having those, their target date right now is Monday, June 2nd. So we're hoping to have that in place and active at that time. And I'll keep you apprised as to how that deadline goes. On a somewhat related note, we had crews in here from Telerad working on an antenna array that's attached to the back of the fire hall facility that we hope will improve emergency radio communication for our police, fire, and EMS services in the area. They're getting ready to activate that yet. I talked to Greg Clark up at CCE 901 today. He was going to be checking with the contractor to see exactly when that should be activated. And we hope that'll be done in the next couple of days. So if you have any questions on these or any other items, please let me know.
Thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome.
Any questions from the commission? Okay. Our next item of business is reports of officers, boards, and standing committees. But we do not have anything for the agenda today. But we do want to recognize Oral Sutliff today. Oral and Eleanor, if you could come forward. This is a certificate of recognition presented to Oral Sutliff for 52 years of outstanding service to the Boyne City Fire Department, station number 51. This certificate is presented to Oral for 52 years of dedication to the safety of the citizens of Boyne City and the surrounding area as a volunteer firefighter. Oral has served the fire department in various capacities over the years and has played a role in a professional station that Boyne City is fortunate to have. This is presented on the 13th day of May.
Oops.
Correction.
Sorry.
The 27th day of May. We missed your last meeting.
I was invited, but I went to a concert instead.
Well, anyways, we just really appreciate what you've done for the city of Boyne City and our fire department. And
thank you very
bless
much.
You. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I make a comment or two?
Certainly.
I heard the siren last night for the first time in quite a while. The other thing I'd like to say is Charter Cable has 51, channel 51, which are the old movies. And last night they had a movie, I think it was called 12 O'Clock High. It was about Second World War and the planes. And one scene, the plane just coming in damaged. So they scrambled the ambulance and the fire department. And the two fire apparatuses was the same as they were when I started. And the movie was made in 1949, and I think we had a 47 model. I'm not even sure what you would call it. It was bigger than a pickup, but smaller than a fire truck.
Wow.
But we fought fire with them. The reputation of the fire department before the guys organized in 62 was we always saved a basement. Well, we saved a house or two after that. So, can I tell one more story?
Certainly. But maybe we should turn around here. I don't know if any of you wanted to get a picture of Oral and Eleanor or Diggy did it.
There was a wintertime late night fire. and it was stubborn. I don't know even if the chief was on at that time, but I can remember going home cold and tired and crawling in bed and needing a little DLC. And I got these lovely words from my wife: "Go take a shower, you smell." Which was probably true. I'm sure I did smell. And the shower felt good, except I wasn't used to showering at 3 o'clock in the morning. I did. Thank you very much. It's been a long, short 52. And one last comment was, the guys always talk about how they fought a fire afterwards at the next meeting. And when Boyne is asked to assist the department, of course they do. The minute Boyne gets there, whoever it is, they give the fire to Boyne. I've heard the chief say more than once, "This is your fire, I don't want it." And the firemen we have at the city, they just go ahead and do their job, and we should be proud of them. And we are. Thank you very much.
I'd just like to say something about the auxiliary. Now, I don't know how long we've been formed. The paper said 40 years, but I think it's less than that, like maybe 25 or 30. I don't know. Anyway, I helped form us, and at that time there was a question whether the guys wanted us girls around, and so, but we took over anyway, bringing coffee and water and things to them, you know, at a bad fire. And it wasn't long for when we heard the chief on there calling for the auxiliary. So we knew we appreciated it. Yeah, yeah. And I've enjoyed it. I've, I think the story that was in the paper was the most funny. Was, I don't know what fire it was, but I think we had East Jordan over here. And they were at the bottom of Ridge Road and Ferry Road, and they was trying to hook up there to a hydrant, and it was frozen. And so Bunny Garlock and I was out, you know, coffee, with hot coffee and stuff, and we seen firemen there, so we stopped. You know, we offer coffee and water to any fireman that's at our fire. And we stopped and we offered them some coffee. They took our jugs, jumped down the sun and the hydrant to thaw out the hydrant.
It was a valve,
but yeah. Whatever. Anyway, we had no problem. We went back and start over again. But it's been fun.
Thank you. Thank you.
This afternoon we have no unfinished business, so we'll move into new business. And the first item is the noise ordinance report. And I believe we're going to turn that over to Scott for to help us.
Thank you, Mayor. As outlined in my memo back in 2009, the Boyne City noise ordinance was found unconstitutionally vague by Judge May. When looking at that ordinance, it's kind of easy to see why. The existing ordinance is all of 300 words and took up about a half page, and basically uses the officer's total discretion in deeming what is a violation. So given that, since that time, the Boyne City Police Department has had a tool to enforce noise complaints. Chief Gaither has assembled some statistics on the number of complaints they have received, the types of complaints, and the areas that they've been received, and that has been provided for your review. So it's pretty clear that some type of noise ordinance is needed to deal with these concerns. When looking at noise ordinances, There's basically two types. One that outlines specific adjustable limits per district that would require officer training with a tool, a decibel reader that's probably cost a couple thousand dollars, and then the training. So there's costs associated with that. Basically, they would receive a complaint, they would go out, they'd measure, identify if it was a violation, then have the ability to act on that. The other type of ordinance is which is much more common if there is a noise ordinance. It basically outlines the various types of violations, and then the officer makes a determination if it's in violation of one of those specific categories. Given the types of complaints that we've received and over time, and given the cost associated with administering a decibel limit, it'd be a recommendation that we have the type that outlines the various offenses and then allows the officer to identify those. Each has its pros and cons, so we're bringing it to you today to talk about and give us direction if you do want to pursue a noise ordinance and what type that we should. Like I said, we would recommend not the decibel limits, but the other type. The Chief Gaither is also here, and Hugh, we talked a lot about this. They kind of have to expand on the things that I missed. So, if you have any questions, we're more happy to answer them. So.
Thank you, Scott.
Okay.
Do we have any additional comments from Chief Gaither or department, other department heads?
I don't have any prepared comments today. I've gathered some information from Scott, and I do concur with him about the decibels. We've been in discussion with numerous other cities that have those kind of ordinances in place, and there's an expense with buying the equipment, there's an expense with training, and some places train people in-house, basically, with limited information. Some people train extensively with these nationally recognized people just to protect their ordinance from challenges in court. So there's a lot of things that go into that with the decibels, but I think what we need in Boyne City is a handle to deal with noise because we don't have it. And there's a lot of model ordinances out there that basically just describe what these noises are and then give the officer the authority to enforce the law once they encounter one of these noises. Kind of what basically what Scott was saying.
Thank you. Do we have any further comments from department heads or staff? Mike, any comments on that?
No, several months ago we set up the subcommittee that consisted of Scott, Jeff, and Hugh to look into this matter, review what options are out there, and gather that information and bring it to the City Commission so you can give us some direction on what, if any, way you'd like us to proceed. That's what we're doing here today, and I'm looking for your feedback.
Okay. Let's see if we have any citizens' comments. Okay, we'll move to the board for discussion. Laura, would you like to start?
Sure. Reading through the noise ordinance as a sample, or the couple of samples that were provided, and then reading through the one that we have existing already, how does the one that doesn't use a decimal level make it less vague? I mean, it's still subject to interpretation by an individual as to whether there's a violation or not. So how would a court view that? I mean, it seems how they viewed the one we have, vague. How would this make it less vague, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Well, my thought is it's more specifically identified than various types of violations. Given this model of ordinances is pretty much predominantly found throughout northern Michigan, I think there's some comfort with using it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're exactly right.
It's
another judge could make that finding.
Okay. And also, I guess if I can refer to some other issues that we've had with noises from the our business park, it's not always the decibel level that's an irritant. So does this direction then cover those types of issues that are annoying noises, not just decibel levels? I mean, anything that's an annoyance.
Again,
that upsets.
That subjectivity involved.
Again, that's subject to interpretation.
I think the thought process here, you're not going to get a perfect ordinance, but you need an ordinance that's going to deal with 90% of the problems.
Okay.
And I think Chief can speak to this. 90% of the problems are the neighbor complaints, the barking dog, those types of things.
Okay.
Where he has zero tool to help enforce that.
Okay. And does this ordinance then say, I know it's not written yet, but I mean, if we go along the line of personal interpretation of, instead of a decibel level, does that cover incidences like we've had with a nightclub and the noise issuance impacting a neighbor who is a resident? Does that address that in any way?
Maybe.
Okay.
I know there's a court case down in Lansing.
Okay.
Where basically it's a phenomenon, it's called coming to the nuisance, where there was a pre-existing nightclub, someone moved next door and complained about the name of the noise. In that case, that's probably not going to prevail. But if there's...
But in this case, when there is no nightclub and the pre-existence of a dwelling...
It's going to depend, it's going to be fact.
Okay, well, I'm still debating. And the other question I have is on the complaints that were filed in total, how many of those were repeat offenders? Do we know? Or are they all individually one offender per item, or is it like the same barking dog at the same location multiple times?
The statistics that I've shared with you won't determine if they were repeat offenders. They were calls either into our office or into 911 for a noise-related issue, where we broke them down by what the noise was.
Okay, and then in this one example, they had fines established at not less than 100 and not to exceed 500. Have we fined anyone in any of these in any of the calls that were made on noises? I mean, has anyone been cited and fined? Or just warned?
We haven't cited anybody since that court decision. That basically struck down our ordinance.
Okay. I guess that's all I have at the moment.
Derek? Thanks, Mayor. Oh, where to start? I'm not sure why this is even before us at this point. Mike had mentioned a group of three got together and bring it to us. Since I've been on this board, there's been exactly one citizen that has continually made comments about a noise ordinance. The only other extremely pointed out matter was the Kirtland issue. Those are the only two issues that have been brought before the board since I've been on it, dealing with noise. And unfortunately, Mr. McCann isn't here tonight because I had a question for him. And I will probably follow up when I have the opportunity regarding that matter. As I look at the chart provided by the chief, the vast majority of the complaints come from music, which is in the Central Business District. So we're going to take the predominant matter of music complaints downtown and throw a blanket noise control and noise regulation on the entire town. That's what this says. The facts are what the facts are. Last year there were four neighbor complaints, and I'm not sure if a lawyer was peeking at my notes, but
no.
I had one of my questions was...
I was not.
Is the judge even going to uphold? I'm going to ask it again anyways, because it was one of my key things. On this Mason model, which is, to my opinion, extremely arbitrary and capricious and subjective on the mood of the neighbor, or the mood of the police officer, who knows? So we're going to just create an ordinance and let the court sort it out? That is foolish thinking, okay? Absolutely foolish thinking. And I understand the police are in a tough spot sometimes, and the chief and his employees have to tell citizens, you know, we don't have a noise complaint. But we have, let's go back to the facts. And I would like to know out of how many of these non or either party and or neighbor complaints are involving fireworks, because a lot of the same data seems to be included in the fireworks presentation in here. And I would like to have that information. How many of these complaints were firework related that were not music related, or music or vehicle? Between party and neighbor, how many were fireworks? Okay? I need to have that data. Vehicles, we've had four the last 2 years and nine before that. So people are taking care of their thing. So we get into the Mason model. Absolutely incredible. Horns and radios, yelling and shouting, 10 p.m. So if your dog's running out in the street at 10:05 and about to get hit and you yell at your dog, you're going to get a ticket. Okay. And it seems ridiculous, but so does this ordinance that's been presented to us. And as I further read through, there's a section in there that talks about waivers. Okay. So I predict that if this model was adopted, that the bars and restaurants or venues that have musical entertainment as part of their livelihood, okay, will ask for those waivers. So we have two choices of the city at that point. We then approve the waiver or we deny the waiver. If we deny the waiver, then we are affecting monetarily a business's ability to make money based on their business model. If we approve the waiver, we have now told everybody else in town, I know that this was the main reason that the issue for the noise complaints. However, you're all going to be subject to this draconian regulation, and we're still going to play our music loud. Okay? I mean, I've heard from my location on Park and Vogel downtown in the summer nights. Same with Strolla Streets. Are we going to shut Strolla Streets down? I don't think so. But maybe we will. With this ordinance, we have the ability to shut Strolla Streets down. Is that what we want? I don't think so. The two issues, as I stated, were Mr. McCann, who bought a piece of property next to a bar, whether he didn't do his due diligence or the previous owner did not inform him that they were allowed to play music. Either way, it appears that he realized it after the ink had dried, and it's been after the city of Boynton City ever since to deal with this matter. And the other issue that Commissioner Sampson brought up is the Kirtland matter. I looked through this a couple times. I could not see, unless I overlooked it, Scott, where it specifically addresses our industrial park and the issues there. Those are the two main issues, okay? You know, I realize it appears to be this is a feel-good response, maybe to one individual who has been continually approaching the city commission, which he has every right to do, okay? But the reality is there are a number of communities that don't have noise ordinances that still exist. Okay, and as of right now, I can't support either one of these. The decibel meter one, if somebody put a gun in my head, it's going to be the decibel one because I eliminate all subjectivity. Okay, the other one, all that does is embrace subjectivity, which is a major problem. Okay, who's determined what my repose and my peace is? I can change it from day to day myself. I may be tolerant of, maybe I have a headache today, and the neighbor's dog, or their bird, or their lawnmower, okay, at a certain point, it didn't bother me, but today it does, and now I'm going to call the police, okay? So now I tie up police resources, for that matter, okay, and follow through, and then they've got to investigate, and then what empiric data do they have? Do they go by the complainant's word? Do we have to stake out a police officer for a time being when they could be out patrolling the streets, checking businesses, making sure the city's safe? I don't know the answer to that, but these are questions that need to be asked. So, I am, the evidence speaks for itself. I contradict the conclusion in the presentation, Scott, that the data provided by the city police does not require that we move forward with a noise ordinance. Absolutely does not. And anybody that says differently, looking strictly data and the facts and the issues we've dealt with in Boynton City that are not specifically addressed here, are fooling themselves, because the data is what the data is. I am absolutely against this subjective thing. Again, follow up with the question. You know, obviously Judge Earhart is not in this audience, but the question is that's what's going to have to be asked. What, is the judge even going to uphold this? So we go through all this work, put citizens through the ringer, okay, only to have either egg on our face as a city again for having an unconstitutionally or vague ordinance, or we tie up police officers' time investigating and verifying and validating. And again, I still don't have the data on what procedures are doing that, because when you throw subjectivity in the form of a regulation, you create chaos. Absolutely. There's not speed limits. We have a defined speed limit. If you exceed that, the courts say if you go to this range, here's your penalty. We have a speed measurement device in the police cars. It is empirical data. It is not subjective to what's going on. The officer has the ability within the law to apply it, whether to write give a verbal warning or a citation. But at least they have the empirical data to go by. And this chart that was provided clearly shows that the music downtown is the issue. How many of those are Mr. McCann? And then how many of the other party and neighbors over the last few years are firework related? Mayor, could you? Chief has a question I would like to call
him. Yes, go ahead.
In discussion.
Thanks, Mayor. Just to clarify,
yep.
The complaints that came in, the music related ones, 2013, there were 27
yep.
music related. Only two of those came from the Central Business District.
Okay.
18 of them came from apartment complexes, and 24 of them came from other sources. So that would have been
18 in apartment complexes?
Yes. Only two of them came. In 2012, there were 24 music complaints.
Okay.
And five of them came from the Central Business District. So,
okay.
So it is a very small percentage of the complaints coming in that are coming from the Central Business District.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So we have the apartments showed 18 of those, correct?
Yes.
All right. How many of the how many fireworks complaints make up these aggregate numbers?
I have the information and I looked through it, but I didn't compile statistics on it. But there was I don't remember seeing a fireworks complaint. There could be. I flipped through them kind of quick.
Okay, I mean, you did present a tremendous amount of data on our fireworks mm-hmm. discussion for that within the last couple of years.
But we separated fireworks complaints for that.
Is fireworks complaint not a noise complaint?
No, for the fireworks complaints that I gave you before.
Okay.
We just pulled those out as fireworks complaints.
Sure.
These are pulled out as noise complaints.
Right.
I actually flipped through them. I didn't compile them for you, but I don't recall seeing a fireworks complaint in the ones that we broke down as noise complaints. But I can bring that back.
Other than the noise, what is a fireworks complaint? The beautiful colors?
They come in as a fireworks complaint. We isolated mm-hmm. that as a fireworks complaint.
Okay. Well, the same data applies. We're still not addressing what was our main concern. Many dollars and court time spent on the Kirtland matter in the industrial part, that is a target area that's not dealt with. Okay, the clearly, the, again, the Mason model provided is, in my opinion, too arbitrary and capricious at this point. Move forward. And that's all for now. I reserve the right to follow up with questions.
I've read it over, and just to start, I agree with my fellow commissioners here on some of the things. I'm okay with developing a noise ordinance that fits Point City and then have it brought back to the commission to look at.
I think Derek and Laura brought up some good points, but there was two comments that I'd like to further develop. And one is that you said an ordinance, any ordinance, will take care of 90% of the issues. So why wouldn't it be in our best interest to develop an ordinance that is going to take care of 90% of the complaints? And that's, I think that would be common sense. As far as your the issue of whether it's subjective or not, and I need Chief's opinion on this, but I would think about every single police action has some subjectivity to it. If you've got a domestic situation, it's the police officer's ability to interpret. It's not black and white. I would think most of, and again, I'm not a police officer, but can you address that a little bit, Chief?
I isolated that one issue, like a domestic. It's black and white in the fact that, you know, the law says if these things happen, so if these facts occur, we can establish the fact, we can make an arrest. This, if these things occur, if you have a noise and it occurs, can you make an arrest? And I understand that it is somewhat subjective. But the model that was presented for you was the Mason model, and I would say I would not be happy with adopting that ordinance. I would say that's a model. You could say these are some of the things that we can pick out and use here, and we could add to or take away things that we need to apply to Point City itself. We respond to complaints quite often for noise. We get calls for noise. And we have to have an answer for the people that call. One answer is, I'm sorry, there's no ordinance, but we're not going to come out because there's nothing we can do, which is difficult to tell people. Or we can say we can come out, and we can go knock on their door and ask them to quiet down, but if they tell us whatever they tell us, we have to do that. It still leaves that question, and it leaves the, you know, we're responsible for keeping the peace in the community. And if there's some kind of a situation going on that's non-peaceful to some people, and we tell them, we don't have an answer for you, you just have to figure it out, that's a difficult situation for us as representatives of the city. So,
And a question for Scott, Mr. Mayor, is Commissioner Gaylord stated that there's a lot of communities without ordinances. Is that, do you have any facts on that?
I checked basically all the cities from Traverse City North, and probably half don't have noise ordinances. I can get those exact numbers to you, just recalling, looking at them.
Okay. I do agree with you, Mr. Gaylord, that, you know, the two big issues, Kirtland and the barn, are the two issues we lost in court. So it's a tough job that we're trying to accomplish here. But I do like the comment that you said we need a tool, as you said, Chief, we need a tool, that at least an ordinance that will help in 90% of the situations. I think that would be a good thing. I do know, as we all know, that even if you have a decibel ordinance, we use Traverse City's decibel officer who came, and Kirtland would have passed. So that's the problem with using the black and white Dust Bowl situation, is that that may not be a winner either. And I know on the Planning Commission and Scott, we've been dealing this for a long time. There is no easy answers, but I would trust staff to proceed and try to come up with an ordinance that fits Point City. And if you recommend to go with the more subjective one than the more black and white Dust Bowl ordinance one, then I would follow your recommendation. And I think it's going to be a process that we have to work through.
I guess the question that keeps going through my mind is, do we not have a disturbance of the peace ordinance?
Yeah, we do.
That's the same statute.
We have an ordinance.
That could be amended, you know, to cover some of these situations. So we have something like that already, rather than trying to make it more subjective when, you know, creating a new ordinance.
I'll check.
Well, we do have the noise ordinance currently. That pretty much is the same as the Mason one, except it doesn't spell out all the different particulars in the same way. It's disturbing the peace or causing, you know, annoying or disturbing sounds that endanger people. That's my reading it through the mayor.
I just had some other comments, not necessarily directly on point to yours.
Oh, okay. All right.
Whenever it's time.
Commissioner
Sampson was talking, I didn't mean to.
Right. Oh, that's all right. That's okay. I just pointed out that we do have something that...
Checking through it, our glossary.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to misspeak.
Okay. One, I want to make sure that the commission is involved, that in addition to these three individuals working on this process, the city attorney was involved as well, too. So he was operating in the background and coordinating with them as to the various options that they were exploring. And again, as the options that are shown at the end of Scott's memo state, we gave the commission, obviously, staff's recommendation to deal with, we really are the majority of the issues that are out there. But options are, as item number two says, is we don't need to do anything with regards to that. The commission's fine with the way things stand. That's fine as well, too. Know that going forward, or whichever direction you want to go through. You're not looking necessarily to have an answer out of you today. If you want to have this discussion, have further thought to take a look at it, and postpone this for further discussion or information from us in the meantime, that's fine. We wanted to let the commission know that based on the issues we were hearing in the community, we've done this preliminary research, we're bringing it to the commission, and looking for what, if any, direction you want to give us with regards to it. If you say enough is enough, and we don't need to go any further, that's fine, too. But at this point, we're introducing it to you. If you have questions that you want us to look at some more, we're fine with that, too.
Well, it just seems to me that 80% of the so-called noise complaints that we have here are, you know, could be handled under that ordinance. You know, disturbance of the peace. You know, where it's egregious. And I mean, it's just, there's witnesses to it, and there's, you know, because even if we adopt this, you know, like the Mason, with all these caveats in it, it's, makes it even more difficult to, you know, to manage. Mr. Gaylord's presentation here is right to the point, you know, as far as the, you know, trying to police something like this. It's a very difficult job, and that's why I'm thinking, you know, is, you know, if we got a broad ordinance that's totally subjective to start with, I mean, it's, but if it's egregious, it's egregious. Do we have a disturbance of the peace ordinance?
I mean, what we have is in the subheading of breach of peace, which fell underneath that noise ordinance. And in discussion with the city attorney, he felt like we shouldn't be enforcing any part of that law, even though a portion of the law was actually what was struck down by Judge May. He felt that we shouldn't be enforcing any portion of that law because it was all related. So the breach of the peace basically says it's a misdemeanor for any person to make any breach of the peace by making any unnecessary, loud, or disturbing noise. Then I think you go really into subjective stuff with that. Mm-hmm. I believe that's why he told us to steer clear of that until we came up with something that was new outside of
So what do we do with people that are fighting and making a ruckus and hollering and swearing at each other or something like that? I mean, isn't that disturbing the peace?
Well, there's a disorderly person, and that's a separate statute.
Okay.
And when people become disorderly themselves, causing it possible harm to themselves or others, then you have a handle to deal with that. But it's not necessarily the noise issue itself.
How about cars going down the street with a boombox that's at 80 or 90 decibels and shaking their windows?
It's all part of the noise ordinance, and so we've just shied away from enforcing it because of what the city attorney is proposing.
And you couldn't cite somebody on disturbance of the peace for, you know, operating a motor vehicle like that with, you know, consistently going through a neighborhood that's...
Not really. Not at this point.
So we need an ordinance set.
Yeah, so we need a tool.
Okay.
I agree with a lot of what was said by Commissioner Gaylord. I don't like the subjectivity of it all. Mm-hmm. If we could go backwards and take our ordinance back and apply it to the general citizenry in the residential areas, we could deal with it. It basically said, don't be loud, you know. Mm-hmm. And, okay, we get a call from somebody, we go to their house, and we say, look, you better knock it off or else. And we've got an or else in our pocket. But now we don't have that. You better quiet down, or else what? Because we'll just go away. So I don't like leaving that interpretation wide open. But I think if we have something that doesn't have to be as regulated as decibels, but it gave us some kind of tool to deal with, we would deal with the majority of these kind of complaints because we have some authority to be at these places. Where right now we have no authority to even be there. And we go there kind of as a courtesy to the neighbors and say, would you please quiet down? But we really have no authority. And I just feel like it makes the whole city, you know, it's very difficult to explain that. I mean, we're representatives of the city. We're going there and we're saying, I'm sorry, you're on your own when you're sort of expecting us to be able to help keep the peace somehow.
Well, I think about egregious noise, egregious situations, and, you know, when things are out of control, that you've got a way to put a stop to it with one simple ordinance, but subjective or not subjective.
But we don't have that at this point.
That's what the chief does.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Disturbing the peace.
I mean, if the commission would like, we can give us some direction on this, or we can postpone it to a future meeting. We could have the city attorney here if you'd like to have him weigh in on some of these items. Obviously, our folks have met with them. You haven't at this point. That's always an option if the commission would like to have him here to speak on it as well.
Well, I kind of agree with Commissioner Gaylord. You know, it's pretty, he really clarified a lot of subjective issues, how these things cause and effect and what, you know, what happens. You know, he's got a close relation and experience with, you know, policing, and so does our chief. But asking us to, you know, to decide, you know, what's the active items we want in this and which ones we don't. You know, if we take this grid here, this it does give us some clarity, but not totally. I think this needs to come back to us with some more ideas, you know, as far as the, what we can enforce, you know, that's related directly to where most of the complaints come from, or have come from. Dog ordinance. I think we already have that in place.
But I, if I may, but to counter that, Mr. Mayor, the chief is asking for a tool. The lawyer has told us that what we have is not working, right, or not enforceable. So I think it's common sense that we proceed. Now, proceed with taking into account Derek and Laura's comments, because they were legitimate comments. But when you say we only had 18 noise complaints, well, I'm not going to tell those 18 residents that your complaint's not legit. Mm-hmm. I mean, 18 in 12 months is legit. Mm-hmm. And that's just noise. And that's not even downtown. That's apartments. So the police department needs a tool. Our lawyer says we need a tool, that what we have is not effective. So I would like to proceed. My motion would be, as recommended, to proceed and come back to us. I mean, this is just a work in progress.
Everything we need to. And kind of what you said, too, a tool that fits Boyne City.
Right.
So we've made that in the form of a motion.
If you're ready for a motion, let's see.
No.
Where is it here?
Recognize Derek here for a moment.
Follow-up. I appreciate where the chief's coming from, and he feels like he's handcuffed, no pun intended, or maybe pun intended, lighten things up a little bit. But, as Scott had mentioned, there's at least 50% or so, maybe a little bit more, a little bit less, communities in northern Michigan that have zero noise ordinances. I'm sure they all have chiefs of police or public safety directors, and I'm sure they have people living in their towns. And I'm sure their people in their towns do the same kinds of things. Enjoy music, have pets, have vehicles, have lawnmowers, chainsaws, whatever the gamut, okay? So I have to ask myself, how are these other communities surviving? If it was the crisis, how are your peers managing their towns and their cities if they don't have this tool? And what research have you done if there isn't a noise ordinance in place? How are your peers handling it, Chief? That's a question. I think it's a fair question that deserves to be answered. Okay, we need to have both sides of the argument in the information. I was talking with a gentleman, and he says, well, what about running my chainsaw? And he says, I said, well, you look like you're going to have to run it during the day if this goes through. He goes, well, I have a neighbor that works nights and sleeps all day. So now they're out running their chainsaw, doing trimming, and the neighbor's sleeping and calls CCE and says, my neighbor, I'm trying to sleep because I work nights and they're running their chainsaw. Now what do you do? These are the things that you create and then trying to fix something else. And we could come up with 1,000 scenarios, okay? Just as if there were many that for noise ordinances. So I'm requesting that we tread extremely lightly in moving forward with the language on this. Because I do not want to create anything that is too onerous on the citizenry. That is absolute definite part of it. And if there is not something in there that it deals with the industrial park with a clear, concise, enforceable, legal manner, then absolutely not going to be part of anything that I endorse. That will be part of this noise ordinance, is dealing with that industrial park in a fair, equitable, legal manner, enforceable. My other follow-up question to the chief is, Mayor, in just a second, whose determination is it? Somebody says, I've got this loud car that every night, whatever, certain time, so they call and report it. And you or one of your officers goes up there, and they happen to hear the vehicle. And in their mind, realistically, they're like, this isn't that loud. Okay? Now as a police officer, they're forced, again, to make this judgment decision to say, and they're going to have to testify to what they do. If it's a civil action and it's taken to court, okay, they're going to have to testify honestly, obviously, that, well, I didn't really see the issue there, but the neighbor was upset, and, you know, the individual says that the neighbor's been harassing him since their day since they moved in, and this is just something else, and now with this, it's a tool to sick the police on them. And I guarantee it happened in the past, and it will happen in the future. So, I appreciate the ability to give our law enforcement the proper tools, okay? But in doing so, we must be extremely careful that the method or the mechanisms that we employ for those tools do not have unintended consequences of onerous and restrictive situations that you and your staff will find themselves in dealing with on something like the Mason model. I think we, again, tread very lightly, and if there is anything moving forward, again, I don't even know why this was back on the agenda. Mr. McCann has been talking about this for 3-4 years or more. I have not heard anybody else other than the Kirtland man talk about we need a noise ordinance and there's a problem. Addressed to me personally or to this body. So, it better have something to deal with the industrial park, a fair and equitable and legal manner. And whatever we come up with, it better be have some either judicial review or some sort of manner that is going to show case law or something like that that a judge will reference to deal with that. And keep in mind the both sides of the issue that I brought up, that when you create a noise ordinance, your officers will be dealing with just as if they don't have anything right now. So, thank you.
Tom?
Given the fact that our lawyer and the judge have said that what we have now is not working, I will make a motion for consideration to direct staff to develop a noise ordinance for the city of Boynton City. Develop a draft ordinance based on the city of Mason model. In other words, not the decibel model. And respectfully take into consideration all discussion.
Who was the second in that?
Gina seconded.
Okay, I have a question for you.
Sure.
On the motion. That doesn't mean adopting this verbatim.
No.
I mean, like, the part that kind of bothers me a lot is, like, no whistling or singing in public on public streets. You know, some of it's a little bit extreme and ridiculous. I think maybe there's maybe a better model or one that we can develop that would be better than that. So. Okay.
Roll call.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Gator?
No.
Brunch?
Aye.
Motion carry?
Okay. Our next item of business is the Beach Water Quality Monitoring Program.
And Andy?
Thank you, Mayor. Commissioner should have my memo and also one that we received from the Health Department outlining the fact that they have basically lost the funding that they have used for many years to monitor the water quality at a lot of the beaches around the state. It's kind of an unfortunate thing. I think it's a good thing that people can go to a beach and know, hey, this has at least been tested this week. The water seems to be pretty good. No issues with E. coli, which is typically what we're looking for. The Health Department has outlined a plan to go forward for the cost of $1,000 per year per beach to be tested. I think that's a fair and equitable deal for the city. It would cost us much more to get the equipment and have it tested on our own. I believe years back, the wastewater department used to do that. But since they've given up that certification, they don't have the equipment to do it at this point anyhow. So it would be my recommendation that we only treat the one beach that is officially designated as a beach, which would be Peninsula Beach. Tannery Beach really is, what everybody calls Tannery Beach is really just a road end park, it's Tannery Park. Mm-hmm. So it would be my recommendation, again, that we move forward with testing the water at Peninsula Beach only for this 2014 season. And at this point, we'll bring it back next year. Obviously, this is going to be a continuing thing, but hopefully that funding stream does get brought back. There's a lot of people who aren't happy with that waterfront cities in the state. So, thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Do we have any comments from department heads or staff? Citizens' comments? Okay, we'll move to the board for discussion. Derek, would you like to
Thank start? You. I think this is a worthwhile matter. This is a small example of, I predict, a future trend. And that trend is in the drying up of federal and state money. So now it's back to us taking care of ourselves and determining what's important. And first thing I want to ask is the city manager, what line item would this fund come out of if it's approved? What does he propose if approved? Andy?
It would probably be covered in our parks maintenance annual stipend that we put together every
Okay, parks and rec. Okay. I think I've said in the past, I think we need to improve the actual sand area in the beach through additional beach screening, which I'm going to be bringing up, if not today, in the near meeting. And clearly, people need to know if the water's safe. I agree with Andy that the location is not an official designated beach, and while it would be probably a good idea or possibly a good idea, perhaps the Lake Charlevoix Association could kick in funds to assist with that. This is right up their alley where they could contribute funds if those dry up. In fact, maybe we talk to them first and look at, see if they'd be willing to, as an association, take that over and whatever the process would be, or contribute part of their funds for their the lake quality. Or tip of the Met Watershed Council, see if they've got a funding that they have raised funds and will be able to contribute. I think we need to first look at other resources of folks that purport to be overseers of the water systems. Well, this is an opportunity for them to further put some action behind their words. So I think we clearly check with those resources. And then if not, if they say no, I'd be curious to find out what the answer, why no. And only as a last resort, taxpayer funds, but I think it's important that we monitor the bacterial and level and so forth within the our beach area. Thank you.
Gene?
I too believe it's important the beach water gets monitored. I support your recommendation.
I support the recommendation.
Lauren?
Yeah, I support the recommendation with a slight twist, maybe. And that would be if Peninsula Beach doesn't test out as good, safe water, that maybe we proceed to test other areas, such as Tannery Park Beach, which is not really a designated beach, but in other words, if the test goes where the water's unsafe, then maybe we want to expand that. But
Andy, typically what happens, Laura, if you're familiar with how the program typically works in the past, and it sounds like it's going to work again going forward if we choose to participate, is they will come out and they check the beach. If there's an issue, they recheck.
Okay.
And then they issue a warning or possibly.
Okay. All right.
And then they'll recheck again in 24 to 48 hours. And then if it's clear, no problem. If it
okay.
fails again, then they proceed with the further possible action.
Right, but then bring it back to the commission if something like that happens.
If something where it becomes a continual issue, yeah, we may have to come back to the commission because it will be recommended to take some sort of action. But until such time as that happens, which I doubt it will.
Okay.
Since I've been here, we only had one time where the beach was noticed. Mm-hmm. It wasn't bad enough to close it.
Mm-hmm.
It was slightly elevated levels, so. I'm willing to bet that we won't have too many issues or anything super, super serious going forward.
All right. No, I'm in favor of your recommendation.
I have a question for you, Andy. The $1,000 fee, is that across the board for the other communities like East Jordan and Charlevoix?
To my knowledge, this was sent to all the lake communities and their region, so.
You know, I don't know, I think about, you know, Sportsman's Park, and I think about the Lake Michigan Beach, the Ferry Avenue Beach, they've got, some of them are a quarter mile long, some are half a mile, probably got a half a mile long, a couple of those beaches.
Charlevoix may test their own, I'm not sure, but they may do their own testing.
You know, we could take, you know, the Lower Lake, North Lower Lake Street, we could take Tannery and take Peninsula, all three of those, and wouldn't equal one of those. I mean, you would think they could do all three of them for that same price. It would seem to me, anyway, because of the, you know, the time and distance. I'd make that request, you know, I concur that we need to have it done, but I mean, I'm supportive of that, but I would think they'd do all three of them for that price, you know, in comparison with, you know, they have to monitor the, you know, the bigger beaches.
Well, I guess I could look into that, Ron. I just don't think $10 per test is a bad deal at all. If you take the $100 a test, divide that by the 10, you gotta remember, they're driving all the way over here, they're doing the lab results, if there's an issue, they're coming back, you know. They're charging everybody the same fee per beach. I don't think it really matters what size. They only test in one spot. They go out and they take it to the water test. They don't test in three or four spots at each location. They just test one spot at each location for water. So I could ask them. I'm not sure what they're going to tell me, but I can say it. Good answer.
Thank you. Any further discussion from the commission?
Just a question. Do we not have the capability to test our own water? Like, don't we have a lab at the water department?
That was when the city used to do that testing. They no longer are certified to do that type of testing.
Yeah, okay.
So,
all right.
What that would entail to get that certification back, I don't know.
All right. This is just a question.
So any further discussion? We need a motion.
I'll make the motion for consideration to approve a contract for beach testing at Peninsula Beach only with the Health Department of Northwest Michigan for 2014 and authorize city manager to sign the required documents.
Second.
Roll call.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Gaylor?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Our next item of business is sale of excess city property. And Scott?
Thank you, Mayor.
little while back, the city was contacted by Ellen Hatch. She owns a home at 427 Luma Street. Adjacent to her is a city-owned lot. She inquired about the possibility of purchasing that lot just for her own use. That particular lot is about 8,600 square feet. It has about 130 feet of frontage. It is a buildable lot. Water is available up front. Sewer is not. If you look right across the street, a lot of similar configuration is built on, so it's obviously could have a house on it. When looking at this, we decided to look at all the parcels in the city of similar nature. Obviously, the city owns lots of property, but you know there are a number of small parcels scattered throughout that the city may want to look at for disposal. We developed this map that shows nine that we have identified. Actually, there's 10 parcels. Number six, there's two different parcels there. And staff has reviewed those. And of those, realistically, one, seven, and eight are probably the feasibly developable parcels. And they don't have any future or present use identified for them. So, with that, we thought we'd bring this request to you. If you would like to move forward with disposal of any of these properties or none of them, and then if so, give us guidance on which parcel you would dispose of, and then give the city manager the ability to process the necessary paperwork to dispose of.
Thank you, Scott. Mike.
Just for the commission's information, parcel number two we picked up a couple years ago through a county tax reversion. Basically, our thought at that time was to kind of keep it handy in case we needed it for drainage property, not so much for developing, but to dispose some water that was possibly coming down from Wildwood Harbor or Park Streets. So that's why we acquired. Seems like there's a couple parcels there.
Yes.
So that's why we acquired that. If we did sell that, any money that comes in above what we paid the county for it, I think goes back to the county as well. So there's not an opportunity to make money there. Also, property number eight, we just had a meeting at the airport board. Any property that we would sell off in that area, and we'd probably want to retain air easement rights to make sure that we can trim any trees or anything that might have a negative impact on approaches to the runway there as well. The other one, and I probably should have gone in order, sorry, jumping back to number five, which is access to Mud Lake or whatever name you want to call it at this point. We do have some road ends that terminate at the lake itself, down some steep hills. I don't know if there's any, I'm sure a lot of pretty swampy area down there, if there's any future concept that we might want to have that as public access to that property as well. So. Those are my only additional comments, in addition to what's on the memo. And we can bring up any of the properties on the map on the screen if you'd like.
Do we have any citizens' comments? Andy?
Speaking of the one by Mud Lake, there is an overflow inlet there on the piece of property currently. So if we did decide to sell that, we need to maintain the easement.
Where is the road end, Mike?
Right now it looks like there's an alley at this location here. And then a road end, I believe, at this location here. So it's kind of, this property is kind of between those two. We do have some frontage there at the end of the road end. I've never really walked down it. There's quite a steep incline there. And as Andy was talking, it sounds like there's some type of a drainage structure that goes up in this direction.
Yep.
very similar to kind of what we're putting in on Division Street, something that'll help regulate the water level. Again, there's no immediate need to take action on this. We're bringing this to the City Commission. The one that really kind of opened the whole issue up was property number 7 over there on Lewis Street, where that does look like it is, took, it's got a little bit, not that long, but to determine that it was a buildable lot. People are looking for lots in the city to build properties on, or to build homes on. So that's the one that probably is the most pressing. Cindy gets calls from them every so often wondering, hey, where's my answer? And, can it come and give you $10 for the piece of property? Obviously, we put these out for bids. We'd have the assessor kind of help us work with some preliminary values, unless we, the commission wanted us to have appraisals done on each of them first. We could put them out there, see what the market bears, if anything, and then come back. I should also remind, or maybe not remind, go back in history a little bit. Property number 1 here at the north end of town, which is near the Hawk Ridge development, that was a source of much contention when I first came to town. The city had was in the process of selling those parcels and setting up a special assessment district for, what's the name of the road, Andy, do you remember?
Court Street.
No, it's off of Court Street.
Newton.
Larch. Newton,
Larch.
I think.
Larch and Newton.
There's some planted roads out here that weren't developed. And the city had worked out a special, was in the process of going through a special assessment district to put in the infrastructure there. We'd actually sold the property with the assumption, I think, that the special assessment district was going to go through. The neighborhood around in that area really was not keen on the special assessment district, and that kind of unraveled. And in the end, the city ended up buying those parcels back. From the sale that we had, I think those are some of the few parcels we have in the city that are on the tax roll that we are, that the city owns and has to pay taxes on because of that botched transaction, so to speak. So anyway, if we are to put that out for sale again, it's with no promises or anything like that that we're going to be extending roads or water through or any of that type of stuff. We're not saying that any of these lots are buildable. It is what they are. Mm-hmm. So, just to give you a little bit of that background on that from some of the commissioners who weren't here at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the developer was Terry Hainer. It was botched. Yes.
Scott is.
Scott.
Just one added detail. Number 1 is in total 10 planted lots, and it's about an acre and a half. Or,
pretty good size. Mm-hmm.
And where's their access?
It would have to be developed.
Exactly.
Okay. That's.
Is it a platted road right away
that's
here?
Miller, I believe, right there. So there's access to it, but it has to be developed.
Yep. This is Miller and this is Newton.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Right. Larch.
Larch. And that comes down to Court Street, which is down there. Mm-hmm.
Larch is the one that's just to the east of that, but we run up. Mm-hmm. Next, just to the west of Brzezinski's house there. Larch. No, Lynn's right here.
Yeah, that's Lynn.
This would be Larch. Or, I'm sorry, this is Larch right here. This is an alley. Yeah. That's Larch. That's me.
But you can't get up that hill.
Those are some very, very steep hills there, too, going up.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, any further questions? We'll move to the commission for discussion. Jane, do you want to start?
Yeah, I rode around looking at a lot of these. You answered my one question. I'm pretty close to Mud Lake, and I kept looking. What are they using this for? But I couldn't figure it out, but you answered that. I'm okay with selling Lot 7 to Mrs. Hatch for purchase. And if any of these parcels of lots not being used for any specific reason or future uses, I would be all right with putting them on the market and getting them back on the tax roll.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with Gene that if we can sell them, if they're no use to us, go for it. But on the other hand, a lot of them are so undesirable that we're not going to be able to sell them. Mm-hmm. With that being said, it's in our best interest, Scott, if you can confirm this, that if it's actually wetlands or maybe not officially let wetlands, but pretty wet, it would be in our best interest to keep them, because wetlands owned by us protects our municipal, I mean, our water. Is that a fair statement? And if you sell them off, they're too small that they would not be under the environmental quality as far as wetlands is concerned.
I would give an example, the two on Main Street.
Yeah.
There's a house that was built there that they had to get a permit from the DEQ to fill partial. The house between those two got a DEQ permit to fill, to build that house. I would assume a similar type of permitting would need for both of those lots. But yeah, you're exactly right.
I'd rather that we keep them to protect the wetlands than sell them, make $5,000 and then get filled in and destroyed. I mean, that's just my thought.
Andy? On this lot here too, right now there's unofficially a drain that comes through here from the Rouse property here. Comes in the corner of the road, drains back through here, down to approximately here, and runs back. Kind of see if it goes out to the lake right there. We probably shouldn't get rid of that one either.
So I think we should sell them, but with keeping in mind that if they're wet, they might be better in our hands. The two on Main Street, would that have any future use access for if we ever could develop the railroad right away behind Main Street? Would that, did they touch that railroad right away, or is that a different piece of property? I think it is. Now that I think about it.
I think this is the old railroad grade right here.
Yeah, right.
So it comes close to it, but not quite.
So it would help us, so to speak.
And I was thinking about that as the staff was putting this list together, and the proximity, I mean, up here at the airport, we were looking at a trailhead either at the airport itself, using the restrooms of the terminal building as a, and the parking area as a place where people could get on the trail at that location. But we also had some further locations closer to the wastewater treatment facility. My thought process was we weren't going to need something mid-block between the airport and M75. I just thought that was too short a distance to really need to keep them. Also keep in mind, if the commission authorizes us to proceed with these, they would all be made available for public bids. So the woman that you mentioned that first asked, kind of raised this issue, she get an opportunity to bid on it,
right,
and sealed bids. We're not just going to her and saying, you know,
no,
it's sold to you. And when those come back, they would all come back to the city commission. We can pick and choose as to which, if any, ones where we think the price, the value that we, the bids that we get on them, if any, are worth taking or not. So you'd be able to make a determination piece by piece at that time as to which ones you want to sell or not.
But would there be a minimum bid?
I mean,
starting bid?
Probably not. I think the city is going to reserve the right to accept or reject any or all bids, and we'll be able to determine that when they come in.
So just back, I'll conclude my statement. Number one is kind of landlocked. Number two is pretty wet going up Park Street. Three and four are kind of wet. Five and there's six is wet off East Main. The one right by Mud Pond's wet. So do what you can, but don't expect a lot of money. And if it's in our best interest to keep them, to protect groundwater, so be it. Lauren?
I guess a quick question on the one on Lewis Street that's being asked about. Do you know when the city acquired that and for what purpose?
No, I don't have that answer.
And I was just wondering why we got it the first place. So just,
I can research that and see if I can
find out. I was just curious, you know, was there a reason why?
All the parcel records that I have back to 2005 show the city, so I have to go back
to Okay, all right. I wouldn't have a problem, you know, with whatever potential pieces could be sold. I agree with Tom, though, a lot of these are wet, you know, areas that we might want to hang on to and are not buildable. This one is a buildable lot, but I can see where, when you drive by it, it almost looks like it belongs to that house as it is. I mean, I always assumed, I didn't even think about it being city property there. I just assumed it went with the house that was already there, so... I can see the reason why the person who has that home would probably think that way. So I wouldn't be opposed to selling it and putting it back on the tax rolls, personally. But.
Derek?
Hey, Mayor. I am all in favor of putting this out for a bid. And whatever process to give us a benchmark or guideline for approximate valuation of kind of what we should be looking at. Obviously, the city manager said we have the right to refuse and accept bids. You know, and then if it's close or obviously above that range, then, you know, that gives us a little better guidance to move forward. If you're somebody that, like Laura said, if you didn't know any better, you think it's their property anyways. They're proud. Who's mowing that? Do we send our city crew up to mow that? To maintain it?
She mows it.
Oh! Yeah. So she's already doing it. Yeah. Is she charging the city for that service?
I think she is.
Obviously somebody else. So, again, whatever plans, I mean, if they are the ones that ultimately acquire, and it may be somebody else that comes over the much higher bid. I mean, they have to understand that. But I have no problem. Today, this is the specific property we're discussing, and I have no problem moving forward with the process to put that out for bids.
One other question, if we do do that, are we going to put a sign on that lot saying that, yeah, this will be open for bids? Yeah.
I think it's a really good idea.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Derek, you mentioned one of the questions I had, you know, the manpower to maintain and, you know, maintain these lots, and, you know, it's better cared for by the homeowner than, you know, the outside of the business. So I'm in support of putting properties out for bids. I'll ask for a motion at this time.
I'd be happy to make a motion, but I want to clarify, if staff feels that it would be better to protect the quality groundwater and not sell it, or, in other words, if the property is so wet that we don't want the DEQ permit to fill it, would we take that one off the list? I guess that's my question.
I thought we're just dealing with property
selling.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Linking a little.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So, yeah, only seven.
That's all we're dealing with today.
Okay.
Well, the commission can determine what it wants to deal with today. Yeah. I mean, when we brought it to you, we brought you nine pieces of property for to look at, not just the one.
Right.
So, can we have a motion?
How was that property described?
Number 7.
Wow.
Yeah. Lewis and, corner of Lewis and Lightfoot Street, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's mainly just on Lewis.
Lewis, yeah. Off of Winton, I suppose.
I'll make a motion to direct city staff to prepare for the sale of city-owned property on Lewis Street near Lincoln to obtain fair market value pricing and to put it out for bid process.
A second.
Roll call.
Town?
Aye.
Gaylord?
Aye.
Grunge?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Yes, ma'am.
Does the commission wish us to do anything with the other 8 parcels, or are we just leaving those alone for now?
If we have interest, I think we may love if we have interest.
Okay.
So that's my input.
I think my feeling for me would be to leave it as is right now. I can't see any other potential to put out there.
I think the Hawk Ridge property will probably be the next if somebody wants something.
Okay.
Okay, our next item of business is the Smart Commute Week proclamation. And
as in the, you see in the memo that was provided for you, Smart Commute Trail of Boyd County will take place on June 2nd to June 5th. It's a week-long event designed to increase awareness for public transportation. Smart Commute Trail of Boyd County is organized by a volunteer steering committee and is partnered with Top of the Michigan Trails Council, and the event is countywide. It's a competition to encourage use of public transportation or bike, walking, or carpooling to work. Participants track their method of alternative transportation, commuting through the days June 2nd to June 5th, and it's a competition between organizations. So the whoever has more employees that commute wins based on the size of their organization. So there's small, medium, and large employer trophies for each. We're recommending that you approve declaring June 2nd to June 5th as Smart Commute Week in support of this event. And if you have any questions, Jim Bauman is on the committee. He can help out as far as elaborating on any of the specifics.
Thank you. Do we have any department heads or staff that wish to comment on this Smart Commute Week? Citizens' comments. Jim, anything?
Well, I would appreciate, you know, the proclamation. This is the first time that Boyd City has really been actively included in Smart Community Week. And, you know, we have four restaurants that are going to give a free breakfast to anybody who's participating in it. And we have some sponsors and participating businesses from Boyd City. And so we appreciate you, your approval of the proclamation and your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other citizens' comments? Okay, we'll move to the board for discussion. Tom?
I'm in full support, and I think Annie should ride her bike to work from way far away.
And I thought about
that.
How do I do that?
And Annie?
I'll ride mine too.
There you go.
Not bad.
So all the DPW guys will be on bikes that week.
Good luck with that.
No, I'm in full support.
Laura?
Yeah, I'm in support.
Darren?
Thank you, Mayor. Smart Commute, Sheriff Lloyd County. Seemed like a good idea. Who can be against Smart Community, right? I'm always curious as to these sorts of matters are brought up for any legislative body, even down to the local level, what the goal is for that, an acknowledgement, an endorsement, I'm not quite sure, perhaps an endorsement. Which leads me to the question, you know, they refer to use alternative methods of transportation. Goal being, as listed below, some of the things. Whether you may or may not want to free up parking for your customers. You may or may not want to have a healthy lifestyle. You may or may not want to have this alleged carbon footprint matter. It's up to individual. My only concern is when a governing body puts its stamp on something, it's either saying, we recommend and encourage you to do something or to not do something. And our nation is very special. We're allowed to travel wherever we want, whenever we want, pretty much however we want. And I think the folks that are choosing to do these things are already choosing. They don't need a governing body to tell them it's a good idea to do that. It's a personal choice matter. There's that personal choice again. That being said, I thought about it and I said, well, that's probably going to get voted through. So I thought, right now it's just lip service. If we're truly into it and behind us, we need to go to the next level. Charlevoix County Transit is part of this program. That was one of the things to encourage the use. So I'm recommending, as part of this proclamation, that between the city and Main Street, that we pick up the tab for city residents that utilize the transit service during that week. Main Street has already done that, or Chamber's already done that with Boyne Mountain in the past, so we already have groundwork established. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, you know what, we'll take this lemon, we'll make some lemonade out of it, and for city residents only for that week. And I think for it may be for somebody that's never even rode the quote-unquote pickup bus, mm-hmm. and maybe they walk away with a different viewpoint of it. So I thought, you know what? Again, right now it's lip service. It's a feel-good lip service. Let's actually put our money where our mouth is. And I think either the city budget or the Main Street budget, however we break that down, I think that's a great opportunity. Because not everybody can afford a bicycle or the ability to ride a bicycle or doesn't know people to carpool. They can't afford an electric vehicle. So this is clearly an important mechanism of transportation within our county system. And I thought, you know, a lot of our senior citizens, some of them may have not even enjoyed it in the past, this will give them an incentive to explore it and maybe expand their horizons and their world by utilizing that service. So.
And you'd want to limit that to city residents.
Then. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Not county, township. This is Boyne City residents for that week. Mm-hmm. And then the transit authority would just verify the address where they pick people up and so they know who they are and go from there. Mr. Bauman from the Chamber has a question, Mayor.
Thank you. Yeah. The transit already thought of that, and it already is free if you've signed up to participate. You have to sign up, you know, your company or as an individual, and the transit is offering that inducement because they felt exactly the same way, that, you know, let's let people try it. It might be a nice thing.
Okay, I didn't read that anywhere in the proposal. That's why I brought it up. So what if we have somebody that uses the transit but doesn't know anything about Smart Commute Week? They're already reducing their carbon footprint. Mm-hmm. Did they get financially challenged because of that?
Well, if they were smart, I guess they could sign up for it.
I'm not prepared to call our citizens not smart. if they didn't. Right. I think we need to be very careful on casting that net there. However it works out, I would like, even with this new information, I would still like our city residents during Smart Commute Week, if they choose to use that to go shopping or to and from their employer, to ride free that week, however it breaks down.
Is there going to be some advertising or story?
I'm not in charge of the Smart Commute program. Laura, I couldn't tell you.
Well, the city donate $100 and become a sponsor of the program, and we are looking for sponsors. We would like some sponsors, and that would be a way to help do that, to help with the promotion of it.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
And that would be the Boyne City businesses only. Or they're doing it if you wanted to go to the village or to Charlevoix, that would be a free ride for a Boyne City resident?
Well, anybody in the county can do it for free. And that's the thing. A lot of them might be going from one community to another, and that's, you know, so it would be hard to sort of pinpoint that. Mm-hmm. But any county resident who wants to ride the bus that week and is signed up for Smart Commute Week gets a free ride for 4 days.
Mm-hmm. How do they sign up?
There's stuff online. It's been in my newsletter with links to that. You could probably just call the transit and do it that way.
Sounds like you've got it pretty well organized, really. Yeah.
Well, the transit's very much behind this. They're actually going to do a little presentation also on what kind of vehicle, the natural gas or what kind of vehicles are the clean vehicles that are natural gas. I think they are going to be doing a little promotion of that concept with a company that sells that kind of propulsion for vehicles. They're going to be having a little demonstration as well. And they're running an ad in the Gazette to encourage people to participate in the program and to find out about the natural gas power vehicles. And at least some of their vehicles are natural gas power as well.
So with the new information that's been brought out, that wasn't part of our packet here, are we comfortable in making the proclamation as stated in the PASO, or do we need to add something to it?
Can we do it in two parts? One is support the proclamation, and then number two, follow through with Commissioner Gaylor's presentation as to either do the $100 group support or the bill be sent to us for any local residents that want to ride that week that are not already covered by another fee.
Laura?
As much as I'd be in support of that, I guess then for me, it would be like every group and organization would be coming to us for a donation for this or that, and that maybe puts an awkward spot. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things out there, so yeah. Does that open us up in the future for
setting precedent?
Yeah, yeah. And that would be my only fear on that coming from here.
Yeah, I haven't got a chance to say anything yet, but my thoughts were the same as Derek's, not quite the same, but I thought it was a great way to promote the Smart Commute. We've been offering free transportation. My thoughts were only 2 or 3 days instead of the week, but same line.
Any further discussion? We need a motion to make a proclamation.
I'll make a motion to proclaim June 2nd through the 5th, 2014, Smart Commute Week in the City of Boynton City.
One second.
Roll call.
Gator.
We're going to put an addendum on it, create another one.
Second.
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay. Motion for an addendum.
Go ahead, Derek. If you can word it better than I can, it's your proclamation. It's your idea. It's a good one.
Well, let's see how we want to word this. As part of Smart Commute Week and to promote the county transit system, all the citizens of Boynton City will have the ability to utilize the county transit system from June 2nd through the 5th with all fees covered. So whatever, if they're not covered, if they're not under another group or whatever,
kind of open-ended, isn't it?
I want them to ride free all week. 2, 3, 4, 5, June.
Wasn't the, I'm sorry, through the mayor.
Because I wasn't clear from Mr. Bowman that it was 100% covered for everybody. I didn't see that.
Is it? It is, isn't it?
You have to sign up for it first. So
right.
Yeah, but I mean, it's...
Are they promoting, if somebody calls and say, I need a ride to work, are they telling them if you sign up for a Smart Commute, and what do they got to do to sign up over the phone?
I honestly don't. I don't think they're going to try to turn a regular customer into a Smart Commute person over the phone. No, I think the idea for this.
But isn't the idea to promote alternative transportation?
Sure, yeah. But if there are X number of people in Boyne City who already ride the bus to work.
So they don't count. Their proactive Smart Commuting doesn't count.
Uh-oh. They're trying to get.
He's bringing up some good points.
It's a great idea to cover all the bus in the morning. That's a terrific idea.
So what about the kids that ride the bus in the morning and the people that ride to work every morning? We're going to give them a free ride all week too?
That's up to you.
I don't know what the financial ramifications are.
I don't either. That's, to me, that's just opening up a...
Well,
we might not be able to control...
Going beyond lip service, that's my point. Yeah. We're all in. Or are we not all in?
I'd make a recommendation, if your commission is interested in going down this path, that we take up some type of a sponsorship role, set a cap or some type of a dollar maximum, whether it's $100 or $250, and then we help publicize the fact that people can participate in the Smart Commute by signing up for it and taking advantage of this, or biking, walking,
sure,
or the other means of transportation, which we are not looking to sponsor.
Correct.
We picked on one.
We're not buying new bikes for everybody.
Well, I mean, but somebody could take that exception,
sure,
you know,
sure,
using the logic to go forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're encouraging one form versus the other, and I'm not looking to have somebody buy me new shoes or that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But if we could take on a sponsorship role and promote people to use the transit for $100 or $250 or something of that nature, to look to encourage people to do what it sounds like they're already planning to allow people to do anyway as part of this process, I think that'd be a great means to support it, to do more than just pass a resolution with regards to it, and encourage them. So that'll take a little coordination, but I think that also puts some type of a cap on it, so it isn't just open-ended.
How many passes or how many rides for $100? What's the cost, do you know?
Wasn't it 50 cents per...
according to age. I think it's a dollar, and then if you're a senior citizen, I think it's a buck, and if you're not, it's $3.
$2 or $3.
Something like that, yeah. So,
I didn't think it was that much.
Right for school kids.
That's out of curiosity as to how much would that do, and is that going to open up a can of worms, like I said, with other groups and organizations or other things in the future for... us wanting to sponsor them as well.
I really don't get too concerned about precedences. That's what you folks are here for.
Yeah, okay.
So, two letters.
Yeah, to say yes or no, you have to make choices from time to time, as you're well aware. Sometimes people aren't happy with those.
We've done it recently.
Do you want to amend your motion to include what Mike suggested?
Okay, carefully, we're going to put it. Sponsorship. On behalf of the City of Boyne City, with
then you want to pick a dollar value. And I was suggesting either the $100 that Jim mentioned or maybe something like $250 or something of that nature. And then we would publicize it.
Yeah, $200, I think, would be a fair cap.
Up to
$200 and participate in the promotion of Smart Commute Week for all forms of transportation. Financial would be specifically for the transit system.
Okay. And the last thing to get that all phrased out for us, maybe not right now, but...
Cap of 200 for the County, Shelby County Transit only for city residents from June 2nd through the 5th. And we also, as a sponsor, promote all forms of alternative transportation for the week. I see we left out skateboards. Is there a horses? I want to make sure we get horses. We should get horses. Should we get horses? That's an alternative form of transportation.
Roll call.
Crunch.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Sansom.
Aye.
Town.
Aye.
Gaylor.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay. Our next item is good of the order. Tom, would you like to play?
I'm all set.
Gene.
Yeah, I've actually got a couple. I've had a comment from a citizen on 2nd Street and wants to know if a dead-end sign could be installed in there somewhere. They said they're getting a lot of traffic coming up there now, turning around in different driveways, not knowing that that's a dead-end.
Yeah, there used to be ones that got taken out by a driveway last
month. Oh, I'll tell you that. Simple solution. Okay, now the next one, I've heard some noise, and I'm just wondering if the donations for Stroll the Street is down since food trucks are in a discussion. Somebody had told me they were, and I don't know, that's why I'm asking.
They're down a little bit. For what reason, I'm not sure.
I had heard one business isn't going to donate at all.
Well, that very well could be. That's their choice.
Yeah. No, I'm just wondering. So I can, something I can tell them. Are they, or aren't they?
They're going to be pretty equal to what they were last year.
Okay.
But I think what you're referring to is that was a choice that a particular business made not to contribute.
Yeah, I realize that.
I just wondering. Maybe just have to cut back in certain areas or whatever.
Yeah.
But there's been other people who have supported it that haven't supported it in the past.
Okay, thanks.
Darren?
Thank you. Following up on one of the items was addressed from the city manager. That was the Division Street drainage. I thought we'd already kind of started on that, but found out we hadn't. The second is the property in front of Betty Shaver's house that's up for sale. Where is that at, specifically, in regards to restoration or drainage design?
New owners, I believe they were closing last week.
Okay.
I settled in, they were going to contact me, and we're going to meet, and either put it back. However they basically want it, we're going to put it back that way.
Okay. And still hopefully try to deal with the water issue until...
In my conversations with him, he doesn't care if he's got a room from Stone Island before I leave.
Okay.
I'm still going to try and talk and leave him maybe this, like, a little bit of a depression there.
Sure.
Nothing major. We'll just see how that goes. Okay. And the ball's in their court.
Okay. The other question I have is regarding some email content from the city manager and the statement you made in there. And I'm wondering, is it appropriate to discuss it in this manner, or should it be in a closed session?
Don't know what you're talking about, so I can't address it.
Yeah. Right. It was regarding communication with you and the gentleman from the MDEQ. I don't know if it was your first email to him or the second.
On which topic?
The fluoride matter, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Feel free to discuss it in open session.
Okay. In that email, that's public record, obviously, you addressed, and forgive me for the gentleman's name, I don't recall what it was. You said, if you have any further questions, comments, and the key word that struck me was suggestions, please let me know. So my question is, what did you mean by suggestions? The city commission already voted, and I want to know what you meant by a suggestion. This is after the vote, this email communication. Questions or comments? Fine. I want to know what you meant by suggestions, Mr. Kane.
Well,
Well, Mr. Gaylor, really not too much. I mean, that's a common phrase I use in closing many of my emails to the City Commission, asking for any feedback with regards to any issue I send to the City Commission. I guess there really wasn't much more to it than that. If you read something else
about
into
what?
It. So. I don't know.
I'm not reading any of it. It is what it is. Suggestions means a direction for information for a direction, what to do something or to not do something.
Okay.
I want to know, I want to hear from you what you meant by suggestions. I thought it was perhaps leading.
Speaking okay. Courtroom. Well, you're reading more into it than I was.
Okay.
I think after the City Commission made its determination, I think I've done a pretty good job with regards to representing the City Commission's position. If you have some concerns with regard to that, I'd be glad to address them with you and from the entire City Commission.
Okay. Well, if we're bringing up debate,
I mean, yeah.
We hear the other side of the story. And
what other side of what story?
From the pro-fluoride.
Oh, okay.
That. So this is... reading the emails,
well, I guess one of the reasons I sent the emails to the commission is to make sure that the whole process was open and transparent
sure.
with regards to it.
Right.
I had many of those people, some of them were here today, that were asking me to take direction on my own, and I certainly didn't want to appear that I was overturning or looking to invalidate a decision of the City Commission. Mm-hmm. I gave my opinions before the vote was taken. Once the vote was taken, the City Commission's position is what it is. Mm-hmm. And I had people, you know, pushing me to contact the city attorney and take other actions that would mm-hmm. invalidate the decision of the mm-hmm. City Commission once it took it. The communications with Mr. Thurston, I was making sure that you were open with regards to it. He was pushing an issue, as I mentioned in my as I mentioned on a couple of occasions, that I was hearing from the state saying they felt that they were recommending that a vote of the people should be used to overturn or change the an earlier initiated vote of the people. I kept pushing them for additional information to say, well, I understand you're giving us a recommendation. Do you have something to back that up? And everything that I kept coming up with was no, they did not, other than a recommendation. So, if you want to read something more into my word suggestion, have at. But my trying to keep you informed with regards to communications that were going on behind the scenes, I see in no way as trying to reverse or undermine a decision that ultimately the City Commission made.
Well, it just stuck out like a sore thumb, the word suggestions.
Well, maybe to you it didn't to me. I'm sorry if I got your mind.
You still haven't answered what the suggestions for what. And then Mr. Thurston, thank you.
Yeah,
his last Thurston. Email back to you was very telling. And it was crystal clear that I perceived when I read his last email back to you that appears a supervisor or director got a hold of him because his total presentation had totally changed. He went from an advocate and an activist, perhaps, to that last email was, well, the legislature's clearly spoken and the DEQ cannot make a recommendation. I'm paraphrasing what the word is. I thought, somebody got a hold of him. So my question is, how much validity can we put into Mr. Thurston's presentation here on that topic? Because apparently, again, obviously I have no proof, but his turnabout in his tone and language back to you on that last email was striking. I don't know if anybody else detected that or noticed that, but to me it was very crystal clear.
I think you saw that same type of communication take place in the letter that was in your agenda packet today as well, too. Again, mm-hmm. from the time the commission took that
right.
vote at our last city commission meeting, I mean, Mr. Thurston came up to me right after that meeting, I think he was talking about in the hallway, saying that there should be a vote of the people on this issue. And I kept asking and saying, okay, I understand what you're telling me. Give me some basis for that. And I've never found any basis, which is why I've given the opinion up to this point, both in the press and to you folks as well, that in my research of the city charter,
yes.
I have found nothing that invalidates the decision the city commission made. Now, we'll have the city attorney take a look at that. You know, my opinion is just my opinion based on what I can find. Obviously, we're now taking it up a step higher to see where it goes.
Sure. Yeah, you're referring to the six-month moratorium as how the charter reads.
Correct. And that isn't even spot on with regards to the type of language. I think the issue before us is I don't think there's any governing language in the charter dealing with spot on.
Right.
Okay. So I'm very comfortable with the memos I sent. I'm sorry if you read something more into it than I intended. I'm always looking for feedback from the city commission. And you know, too bad you waited until now to bring it up. If you had some questions that were weighing on your mind, I would have been glad to address them earlier.
Sure, I'm sure you were. But the email with word suggestions was not the city commission, that was to Mr. Thurston from the DEQ.
Okay.
As part of a back and forth discussion.
Well, again, also remember that I was looking for him to give me suggestions as to where to look in state statute with regards to it. I was looking for evidence as
and that was the question.
If he has something.
Why was he still looking? And when the simple answer was the city commission has voted on this matter. Thank you for your correspondence.
And that was my.
That did not come from you, and that should have been back to them. And the very last.
No, I disagree. If there is some type of state statute or something that I am unaware of, I'm here to gather information and present it to the city commission. And if you made a mistake or I found something that was illegal, I would have a duty to check that out and respond to that. I was not finding anything that was like that. I told people that very clearly, that here's what our charter said. I provided them copies or citations of our charter with regards to that and said, here's what the language says. There isn't anything other than a six-month moratorium on referendums and initiatives that govern this type of stuff. So I think the commission was in clear sailing with regards to the action they took. If you have some state statutes or someplace that I need to look someplace else to tell me further, let me know. And if somebody had brought that to me, whether it was Mr. Thurston or somebody else that was in the audience, or you know, or anybody brought me some information, that's my job. My job is to research and find out things to make sure that whatever decision the commission makes is supportable, or if there's a problem with it, I need to let you know that too. But if you're insinuating that for some way I was going out there and looking for information or basically feeding somebody on to overturn the city commission's decision, you're dead wrong.
Okay. Well, I didn't accuse you of that.
Well, it certainly sounded like you did.
The word suggestion, though, Lee, is very much clear and open. And again, I go back to his last email back to you, and basically he admits in that email, I'm going to paraphrase, it's none of our business what a municipality does. But yet it was his business. Here is a representative pushing for it and communicating with you afterwards and follow-up communication back and forth with you on that matter. Okay?
Well, yeah, I understand that. And again, he was...
As a representative of the state of Michigan.
Yeah. And I believe he and his department and the letter that we got that was in your agenda packet today say they basically say, yeah, that's the commission's choice. We recommend otherwise.
Right.
They weren't backing down on their recommendation. They were backing down on their interpretation of the process. And again, I kept challenging them to say, I hear what you're telling me about recommending. You know, that's fine and dandy. I can recommend. Sure. I do recommend all the time, but the commission doesn't have to follow it. And unless you have something stronger to give me than a recommendation, whether it be a state statute or a federal statute or something, well, again, thanks for your input, but that doesn't really cut it.
Okay. All right, that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lauren?
No, I'm good. Thanks.
And also, announcements. The presentation of the proposed city facilities will be Tuesday, May 27th, 6 p.m. at the Boyne Area Senior Center. And the next regular city commission meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, June 10th, 2014 at 7 p.m. And it's 228. I'll make a motion for adjournment.
Second.
Roll call.
Kaler?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Motion carried.